Got a question. It's actually a word, which is probably one of the most, in religious terms, one of the most overused and, because of that, somewhat devalued word in our religious lexicon today that I'm going to talk about. So, what would you call it when someone who is obviously, what would you call this person who obviously puts on a pretense of being something that you know he is not? Say it again. Hypocrite, right. Okay, you know the story. Good. Sermonette finished. Mr. Brown can come up and do the next song. But wait. Like the infomercial says, there is more. The International Standard Bible Encyclopedia has a description for this word hypocrite, which actually comes from the Greek, and it's a word that comes from the Greek theater, and it means playing a part on a stage, putting on a mask to represent or misrepresent reality. In the Greek theaters of Jesus' time, before and after, the actors were known as hypocrites. And it's actually, we just take the Greek word, we just pronounce it differently. The Greek word was pronounced hypokrites, and it had no negative connotations. Webster's Online Dictionary defines this word in the terms that we most often tend to use it. A person who puts on a false appearance of virtue or religion. Another definition is a person who acts in contradiction to his or her stated beliefs or feelings. Now, a lot of people see that Jesus uses this term hypocrite. He's directly quoted 17 times in the New Testament, mostly in Matthew and Mark, using this word. And they say, wait a minute, how can he do this? He's from Nazareth, which is a small, simple village of the time, an Aramaic-speaking farming village. And people wonder, well, how can Jesus know this word? How does he know Greek? He spoke Aramaic. Where would he get it? And they would say, well, maybe Matthew didn't write this book after all. Somebody else wrote it later, because they used Greek words like hypocrite. We know that even in Jesus' day, some people didn't think too highly of Nazareth. You don't need to turn here, but in John chapter 1, verse 44 and 46, when he calls Philip, he calls Philip to be a disciple, and Philip is all excited, and he runs to his friend Nathanael, and he says, I found him! I found this guy who's been prophesied for Israel, the Messiah. His name is Jesus. He's from Nazareth. And so this guy gives this, yeah, right, reaction. In verse 46, he says, can anything good come out of Nazareth? And Philip says, well, come and see. So they go and see Jesus. Now, at the time that Jesus was born, in 4 BC, we know that Mary and Joseph went from the Galilee to Bethlehem for a census and taxes. And then Joseph and Mary had to flee to Egypt to protect Jesus from being killed by Herod. Shortly after that, Herod died, and there was a major tax revolt in the Galilee, and in the center of it was in the largest, most prosperous commercial city called Sepphoris. That's spelled Sepphoris, and it has different pronunciations. The Romans, of course, they don't like tax rebels, so they did what they do well. They went to Sepphoris, they destroyed the city, leveled it, burned it to the ground, killed a bunch of people, and sold the rest into slavery. After that happened, while Joseph and Mary and Jesus were still in Egypt, Herod Antipas, who became the king in Galilee after Herod, decided to rebuild the city as an ornate show place and made it the capital of the Galilee. When Jesus was growing up, we know that he was what the Bible calls a carpenter. The Greek word is tekton. And Joseph, his father, and Jesus and his brothers, they were builders, contractors, carpenters. And they were very involved in the rebuilding of Sepphoris, which is located only less than 4 miles from the city of Nazareth. So this was a very ornate city. Josephus, Flavius Josephus, calls it the ornament of all the Galilee. It had paved streets, walls, multi-story buildings, two big markets, and a Roman theater that could seat 4,500 people. Now, if you think of the fabulous Fox Theater in Atlanta, I think it seats 3,500. Sepphoris had a population of around 40,000, and it was the leading commercial city. So now you start to get some idea of where Jesus would have known about this term hypocrite, because he knew Sepphoris, he worked in Sepphoris, and he knew about the theater, probably helped build it, actually. The scholars say that Herod Antipas had the theater built, among other things. In Matthew chapter 6, Jesus uses this term hypocrite three times in this chapter. You don't really need to turn there unless you want to, but it's chapter 6, starting in verse 1. He says, "Take heed that you, when you do your charitable deeds, that you don't be like the hypocrites." And then he describes how they put on a show. They make a big deal of this charitable work. And then he tells what we should do when we do charity. In verse 5, he says, "And when you pray, you shall not be like the hypocrites." And he talks about how they love to be seen praying, and then how what we should do when we pray. And then in verse 16, he says, "Moreover, when you fast, do not be like the hypocrites with a sad countenance, because they disfigure their faces and, you know, put on this appearance that they appear to be fasting." So Jesus is warning us, don't be like this. And in every case, he says, they want to be seen by men, they have their reward. Just like in a Greek theater or in any theater, if the actor is really good, he gets praise, he gets applause, and of course he's a professional actor, so he gets paid for his work. Now, one of the purposes of the Greek theater was to tell people, since most people, even if they could read, books were expensive. You didn't have your own books. And even if there were libraries, you couldn't check out the book and take it home. The purpose of the theater was to tell these people who they are, what their culture is, and what their place, so it told their history. It's not just entertainment. All these people know the story, right? Because these plays have been circulating for hundreds of years. They know the words, they know the plot, and if the hypocrite or the actor does it well, he gets applauded, and if he makes a mistake, forgets his lines, gets the wrong words, everybody knows that he messed up. Even if he is able to go and make it, sort of get himself out of the jam and not wreck the whole performance, people still know that he messed up. So now let's turn to Mark chapter 7. This is the incident which is also referred to in Matthew, where certain of the Pharisees and the religious scribes come to Jesus and they complain that his disciples aren't following the proper traditions. They're actually trying to call him a hypocrite for saying that basically you're setting yourself up before these people as a religious leader and you're teaching them religion, but yet you don't teach your disciples to follow the tradition of the elders. So they came from Jerusalem when he's preaching before this crowd. And in verse 2, he says, "Now, when they saw some of his disciples eat bread with defiled," that is, unwashed hands, "they found fault. For the Pharisees and all the Jews do not eat unless they wash their hands in a special way, holding to the tradition of the elders." And in the New International, it says, "unless they wash their hands in a ceremonial manner." And then it goes and describes it when they come from the marketplace, how they do, and they put on this show of washing their hands. This was an elaborate performance that these people would do. You didn't just take a little soap and wash your hands and then you go eat. You start out and you have to do each finger, then you do the palm, and then you go up to the elbow, over the top of the arm, down to the top of the hand, back around the fingers. You do it three times. When you're done with that arm, then you go do the other one. But wait, there's more. Because when you're doing all this, you're supposed to say Kaddush. It's an incantation, a prayer for the washing of the hands. And then after you have done that, then you are now worthy and purified to partake of this blessing and eat this food that God has given you. So it's not just about... So then Jesus answered and he said in verse 6, "Well did Isaiah prophesy of you hypocrites. As it is written, this people honors me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. In vain do they worship me, teaching as doctrine the commandments of men. For laying aside the commandment of God, you hold the tradition of men, the washing of pitchers and cups and many other such things as you do." And in verse 9, he said to them, "All too well you reject the commandments of God that you may keep your traditions." And then he goes on and describes these certain other things they do and some of the examples that they do. Now, Jesus tells us that we should not do this, that we should be, as we're going to go to Matthew 5 now, starting in verse 14, where he talks about the light of the world. One of the dominating features of the city of Sepphoris was that it stood on a hill 920 feet above the surrounding countryside, halfway between the Mediterranean Sea and the Sea of Galilee. You could look up and see it for miles. It dominated the countryside all around. When Jesus was in this place speaking to these people by the Sea of Galilee, this is the Sermon on the Mount chapter, when he mentions the city hidden up on a hill, all they had to do was look up and they could see it because it stood out prominently. In Matthew chapter 5, verse 14, he says, let's see, let me find it here. I'm going to use the NIV and the NKJV are very similar here. It says, "You are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl or under a basket," I think the New King James says. "Instead, they put it on its stand and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before men that they may see your good deeds and praise your Father in heaven." And then the New King James says, "The city that is set on the hill." Now, a lot of people would not like what we do. For instance, we come here on the Sabbath, on Saturday. We go to church. Now, a lot of people who go to church on Sunday, they know the story. And just the fact that we are here on the Sabbath, on Saturday, to them, they think we're condemning them just by saying that they are wrong. And they know the story. They can go to the Bible and they can say and show us things where Jesus went to a synagogue on a Sabbath and did certain things. Just like in the city of Sepphoris, most of the people, they were Jews, but they were Greek speakers. They adopted Greek culture, and they spoke the Greek language. They gave their kids Greek names. A lot of these people had Greek names. Most of the Jews who lived down on the Sea of Galilee in the small villages like Nazareth and Bethsaida, they spoke Aramaic. And they believed that they were superior to these Jews who adopted aspects of this pagan Greek and Roman culture. And when they were doing this, they were speaking Aramaic, which is itself a language that they got from earlier pagan conquerors, like the Babylonians. You can see in Acts chapter 6, starting in verse 1. You don't have to turn there, but it talks about the disciples are multiplying. This is after the Pentecost, the church is being set up, and it says, "There arose a complaint against the Hebrews by the Hellenists because their widows were neglected in the daily distribution." Now, another translation says, call it the Greek speakers complaining against the Aramaic speakers, or in the original King James, the Grecians complaining about the Hebrews. Now, if you notice how they solved this problem, It says they summoned the 12 together, and they didn't say to the Aramaic majority, the speaking majority, you're discriminating against these people, you have to serve them too. He tells them, get some of your own people and let them take care of it. So in this first six verses of Acts chapter 6, you see that they basically told the Greek speakers to handle the problems themselves, and this is the beginning of what we say is the first appointment of deacons to serve in the church. So there was divisions there. There were people that did not particularly approve of the people of Sepphoris, but yet Jesus points out to this city up on a hill and says, we should be a light. We shouldn't be hypocrites. We should not just be play acting. When we go home today, hopefully we're not going to just take off the dress clothes, put on the Saturday clothes, and go back doing what we did as if nothing happened, as if there was nothing to be learned from what we did here. Just like in the theater, the actors, when they're done, they take off the mask, they take off the costume, they scrub off the makeup and go home and then lead their normal lives. So we don't want Jesus to say of us when he calls us to see if we're going to be in his great city he's going to build on a hill to be the light of the whole world. We want him to say that we are the light of the world. We don't want him to say, you hypocrites.